Massacres and genocides are as old as the human race, and many nations have been affected. Anoush Tartalian had a conversation with Pacifica Africanist Alombe Brath to compare notes on the subject.
We're talking to Anoush Tartalian, who is an Armenian-American, meaning that she was born, she's the first generation American, but of course her ethnic background is Armenian. And she is a person that's very, very interesting to talk to, particularly in the context of today's scandalous genocides going on all over the world. And one of the earliest genocides that people talk about is 1915. So what we want to do today is to have a chance for you to tell us about the Armenian genocide. Let people know how that impacted on the people and the reason why it's getting such a little recognition. People don't really want to talk about it, but it keeps popping up. And now we want to find out why is that.
Well, first of all, the Turks deny that this happened. In fact, last Saturday in Times Square, they had a big demonstration saying that Armenians were liars. But there's many historical documents that...
It was a Turkish demonstration?
Yes, there was.
And what was the demonstration for?
The demonstration was... see, you have to realize that right now, Turkey wants to join the European Union.
Right, NATO.
But since they're known as a human rights abuser country, they try and deny that they're abusing people's human rights. But right now in Turkey, there's Article 301 that you can be imprisoned for mentioning the Armenian genocide. There are over 70 people in the courts right now. A journalist recently was threatened with years in jail for saying that the Armenian genocide happened. They are trying to deny it. And things like eyewitness accounts, they say, are forgeries. The Turks themselves, after World War I, when the Ottoman Turks left and there was an interim government from 1918 to 1923, they put those Ottoman Turkish leaders on trial and found them guilty for the genocide. But the British, who had imprisoned them in Malta, exchanged them for British prisoners and let them go, and they were never really brought to trial. Mm-hmm. And it's very terrible that, you know, I've been interviewing genocide survivors right here in Flushing. There's seven in the old age homes, and you know, they pay taxes all their lives, and U.S. taxpayers have paid billions of dollars to support this dictatorship in Turkey. And, you know, when people go as tourists to Turkey, they never think that they are on occupied Armenian land, and some of the sites they're seeing are ancient Armenian monuments that have been relabeled as Turkish. And it's, besides a physical genocide, it was a cultural genocide. And myself, when I grew up, my parents never told me. I found out when I was reading in the library, and I asked my mom, why didn't you tell me? And she said, because it was too sad. And then I also realized that, I mean, if you look at me, I have light skin, and most people would think I was white. But then I'm not white. I'm a light-skinned person of color. Mm-hmm. And this is very important because even though I have light-skin privilege, I do not have white privilege. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference because white privilege means that you're in the dominant culture that benefits from...
The European culture.
Yeah, the dominant European culture that benefits from exploiting the world. And now because Europe is afraid that they're going to be outnumbered by people of color, they're grabbing light-skinned indigenous people and claiming them as European. And this is so dangerous because the Europeans have stolen so much. Why give them any more indigenous people? People have been miseducated. There's this movie, The First Eve, by the Discovery Channel, how the race originated in the Congo, and the first place going out of Africa was Yemen, and that the Middle East is the first transition. You know, we have African ancestors. You know, they don't really believe me. And so I have to deal with the racist education of my own people, you know, and try and make them in solidarity with other indigenous freedom struggles. For instance, Haile Selassie, during the Armenian genocide, he rescued 40 Armenians, you know, because there's a connection between the Ethiopian church and Armenian church, right? He allowed Armenians to become citizens of Ethiopia. He had Armenians as a band welcoming, you know, dignitaries. And he really understood what the atrocities that the Turks had committed. And Nelson Mandela had refused the Ataturk Peace Prize because he also knew the human rights abuses by the Turks. But Armenian government has never honored Nelson Mandela and thanked him. They have been raised in this isolated situation where they really haven't met very many Africans or people of different cultures because they have been isolated. And so their stereotypes from the TV and go on. So I went back there and there was a war going on where Azerbaijan was attacking the part of Armenia that, you know, Stalin gave part of Armenia to Azerbaijan in 1923 to destabilize the area. And then when Gorbachev announced perestroika, the Armenians wanted independence. But the Azerbaijans went to all the Armenian houses in the capital, Baku, and raped women, killed Armenians. There was a massacre. And then Armenia started a guerrilla movement to get their independence from Azerbaijan. I was part of that movement. I was 9 years in the war zone as a volunteer. And I saw that this freedom struggle is very similar to indigenous freedom struggles around the world, and that it's important for people when they look at me, not, I feel so insulted when they say I'm white or European. And I know that the Armenian government wants to identify as European because they get more money for aid, because Armenia is really in bad shape. A third of the country have left to get jobs because of the blockade of Armenia, which you never hear about. You hear the blockade of Cuba, but you don't hear that Turkey and Azerbaijan are blockading Armenia. You know, the thing is that even though New York has over 200 nationalities, there is no organization that deals with intercultural racism. Mm-hmm. And I think this is really a big need, because mm-hmm. I have been to places like people of color groups, and I'll say, well, I'm not white. And this woman, she said, oh, I looked up Armenian encyclopedia, and it's part of the Caucasus Mountains, and you're Caucasian, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're a liar, get out of here. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, that's just European racist terminology. You know, like they can define us, but that's not who we are.
But that's very unusual, you know, because the Europeans have been able to dominate the paradigm for everyone to adhere to. And so therefore, it's hard to find people who are willing to say, no, I have my own background. It happens to look maybe alike, but we're not Europeans. We are people from Asia Minor. We're probably closer to Asia. And we are not denying that. We are not trying to be Europeans. Whereas in the Turks, even though most of the Turks you would see probably are darker than you, but they would love to be just generally accepted. Churchill didn't want them to be accepted as Europeans. And even now, it's one of the things that holds them back from really being swallowed up completely into both NATO and the European Union. It's a big, big fight over it. And it's not because they did the genocide. It's because the people who are Europeans look at them as Asians and Muslims. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think that's unusual in your viewpoint of yourself and your people in the world. It's very, very different. And the fact is that how many people among your people think like you, the usual way of viewing themselves as Europeans?
Well, again, it's a matter of education. The American educational system leaves out the people of color movement. In the people of color movement, there's usually five main groups: African, Asian Pacific Islanders, Latina, Caribbean, Native American, Middle Eastern, Near Eastern. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that there is no real Middle Eastern contingent because of Israel. A lot of Falasha Jews are the original darker Jews.
Yeah, we call them the House of Better Israel.
Yes. They think that Russian and European Jews that are coming to Israel are white and that they're not people of color. They're just white invaders. So whenever you try to start a Middle Eastern contingent, the Israeli factor will disrupt it. And what's also really sad to me is that Israel doesn't even recognize the Armenian genocide.
Wait. Israel doesn't recognize the Armenian genocide?
No. They said it was not a genocide. It was a terrible tragedy because Israel is a strong ally of Turkey. Mm-hmm. And the geopolitics, you know, where Americans want military bases in that region.
And because Israel having Turkey as another Muslim state, that would be neutralized. In other words, if they have a quid pro quo between the two of them, Israel feels that's better for them than to worry about the Armenian genocide.
Definitely. And you know, they share airspace, they share water. American taxpayers have given billions of dollars to support the apartheid countries. And, for instance, the American Jewish Committee actively lobbies Congress not to recognize the Armenian genocide. In 2004, they sent letters to all the senators saying, don't recognize this. The American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, APAC, does the same thing. And, of course, there are, you know, individuals individual Jewish scholars who speak out about the Armenian Genocide, but in general, Israel as a country is not supporting the Armenian Genocide at all.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because usually Israeli foreign policy, the tendency is to identify anybody who has had a genocide because they argue that if you have undergone genocide, then you can speak on it. They did it in Rwanda when the Rwandans who had suffered genocide, you know, by the Batutsi, so-called Tutsis, but Batutsi group was slaughtered in 94 by the Bahutu. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that for the Israelis who came to the Rwandan government later on, where they went along with the United States and then turned around and then slaughtered more people, their genocide was about 1 million people in 98 days. It's one of the probably the worst genocides by number of people killed in the space of time. So they were able to get the Rwandans to go along with them in fighting against the Congo. Because what they told them is that, look, no one can tell you what to do. Once you have suffered under genocide, then you have that experience and you know that you can't afford to lose. Because if you lose, your whole people is dead. So they use it. So it's ironic that in this particular case, they would flip the script and then go back and say that we don't recognize this genocide, which actually is also interesting because the Armenian genocide in 1915 came after the Namibian genocide of 1904. Mm-hmm. And in that genocide, I always argue, I've been arguing for this for about over 30 years, that if the people were interested in human rights for all people, irrespective of race, color, and creed, and religion, they would have stopped the Germans then because the Reichsmarshal of German Southwest Africa was Heinrich Göring, who was the father of Hermann Göring, Hitler's right-hand man. Mm-hmm. So in other words, because they allowed the genocide to take place in 1904 in Namibia, which was a practice, then they could perfect it to do what they did in Germany. And I always argue that if you really were serious, you would have stopped it right there. The whole world would have stopped the genocide in Namibia, and then perhaps what happened in 6 million Jews and other people in Europe would never have happened.
I totally agree with you. But you have to also look at the amount of Jewish influence in the press and why today is the Congo not mentioned in newspapers and on TV.
You're absolutely correct.
And I feel that, you know, if they're really interested in stopping genocides in other places, that they would deal with that.
I'm glad you recognize that because if they really was against genocide per se, then they would have actually been talking about what was going on in the Congo because the Congo is documented by the Western countries that since 1998, when the war jumped off to try to oust Laurent Kabila, that 4 million people have been killed, more people than all the people who were killed since World War II.
You should not just be
talking about the Sudan, you should also be talking about the Sudan and what happened to the Rwandans who have been victimized, turn around and victimize the other people.
Yes, and you also have to look at the educational system. Here in New York, public schools, how many Jewish holidays do they get off? And yet, how many Native American holidays do they get off? Mm. The United States is allies with Turkey and won't recognize the Armenian genocide. President Bush said he would recognize it, but he lied. And then we're also getting to the problem of reparations.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Same
thing
in Namibia. Namibia is demanding reparations. And Haiti is demanding reparations. And that's why they ousted Aristide. Mm-hmm. But the thing, you're absolutely correct. But I can't really see how large a population is the Armenian people.
Right now it's around 7 million. There's actually more Armenians outside of the country of Armenia because of the blockade and the unemployment than in Armenia. But the thing is that, you know, my grandmother's family, my grandmother saw her parents shot down before her eyes and her family killed. The Turks have their demonstration that this never happened. But reparations for all indigenous peoples. There's going to be an Indigenous Peoples Conference at the United Nations in May. Mm-hmm. You know, it's time for Indigenous peoples to really get together and demand reparations for everybody. Mm-hmm. Usually when they have Middle Eastern speakers, it's just Arab speakers. A lot of people don't even know there are non-Arab Middle Easterners. You know, Armenia was the first Christian nation, and there are many other Middle Eastern peoples that aren't Arab. So you need to have diversity. You can't be divisive. We're just only having one thing and excluding other things.
Now, although you say that there's very little about it, it seems to me, I keep always hearing about 1915 when you first called me.
Yes.
You know, the idea was, I told you right away, I'm very familiar with it. And it would seem that a lot of people have, the problem I'm having is that a lot of people hear it but don't pick up on it. And you ask them about it, it's, oh yeah, I heard about it, so what? They don't make a fuss over it. They're not like you're trying to agitate people to let them know this happened and it's still, in a certain sense, happening because the people are still suffering. Because people always suffer from genocide. Genocide is not something that just happens and then you forget about it. You can't forget about it. I mean, people are humiliated. Their psyches are damaged. The idea of what happened to them is something that they would have a post-traumatic syndrome based on what happened. And when they hear these stories coming from their forebears, people who went through the genocide, I mean, why should it just happen to the Europeans who happen to be Jewish, where they would remember it? But you could turn around and say that somebody else had happened to. They shouldn't. I don't understand. It's the phenomena should be that if it happens to one person in the context of their own existence and the people who they have been harmed by, it would seem that everybody who's undergoing the same thing would have the same kind of contradiction.
Well, you have to realize that, for instance, Armenia was one of the most conquered nations on the world, being on the crossroads of so many bigger powers. And unfortunately, it's a very conservative culture. So even getting the full information of what is going on, some of the genocide survivors said, well, you're the first person I've ever talked to even tell the story. So for 40 to 60 to 90 years, these stories haven't been out there.
You see, and also when people come here, people who were not defined as white in Europe, they were just whatever that group was, and that's what they were persecuted as. It wasn't because of their color. They were the same. But people don't realize that the United States has been able to, since Perestroika and getting rid of the Soviet Union, that the Warsaw Pact countries that was faced off against NATO are now being absorbed into NATO. And the whole idea of, you know, the Project for a New American Century is the United States will be the dominant force all over the world, in all over Europe too. I mean, the Europeans will not be able to get beyond what the United States, and they don't intend to ever have another rival like the Soviet Union. And so as a result of that, what you have is that the Western powers, particularly the Bushites, they're building a white army. It would be just like the French Foreign Legion, to go everywhere they have to go. But say, like in countries like in Africa, one of the things that the anti-war movement here is missing is the whole idea of how important Africa is in this war that nobody's talking about. I mean, they talk about it, but it doesn't mean anything because they have come to the point where they accept that, oh, you know, Africans are always going to be hungry, they're always starving, it's their own fault. They don't talk about imperialism, how it plays a role in actually destroying people and actually pauperizing people. You know, they don't understand that Africa is the richest continent in the world. And the reason why it's not, the fundamental contradiction there, is that the Africans don't have their wealth. They don't have any control of their wealth. So what I'm arguing is that the same thing you were saying about how they want to get more white people in Europe is the same thing they're really doing now as they start to bring people into the European Union and they start to bring people into the NATO. And so therefore, the Soviet Union, Azerbaijan, and all the other Stan countries, all of them have been actually minimized to the point where they don't even understand how they're being misused. And in Africa, because of the so-called war on terror, the United States has been able to get the FBI, the all military intelligence all over the continent to say, look, you're very vulnerable to Al-Qaeda, so therefore we're going to put up a base here. So you have bases being strung all across Africa, even at the same time as they talk about building an African Union.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's very important for people to recognize their African ancestry and stand up to be light-skinned people of color. This intercultural racism is a very serious thing. You have to have dialogue with people. You have to, like, try and think, what is that difference between being light and a light-skinned person of color? You know, I would be happy to come and give talks to any educational place that wants me. I also have videos of the war zone in Armenia when I was there. You know, I interviewed a lot of the hostages and torture victims. And Middle Eastern things should be included in people of color studies. And I also have a lot of information on Armenian women because a lot of times Middle Eastern cultures, women have a certain position, but I think that there needs to be some way to have that representation and without the anger and the hatred about light skin taking over. And so I'm trying to do my part dealing with the racism in my own community and introducing them to knowledge about Africa, but I can't do it alone. I need the community's help.
Right. So you really have a difficult time because you have to try to get the Armenian community to understand. You have to get them up to speed.
Do you know that April 20th 24th is International Genocide Commemoration Day because on that day, the Turks killed 300 intellectuals. And so when we had our demonstration here, I said to the committee, please invite a Native American speaker to do the opening blessings because we're on Native American land. They've also been through a genocide. You know, it was a longer one, but it's the same thing. And to this day, they have never invited that Native American speaker, and it hurts me. It's painful to deal with racism in every direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, these things, these contradictions happen because, first of all, when you talk about the African community has been ripped off. So many things have happened to it, has undergone so many changes, has seen so many contradictions, seen people promising and making so many promises and then turning around. And then one of the worst things that African people feel is that the denial of self-determination. That white people, in general, believe that they can come and lead anybody, you know, because they know it all. Whereas black people are saying, look, we tried everything else, and we also know what we had before we came in contact with Europeans. So therefore, what we want to do is see, let's try this. Now, you had other people always messing in Africans' business for their own ulterior motives. So therefore, people are very skeptical, although right now I don't think it's as sharp as it was before, particularly when the Renaissance came and we helped to initiate in the early 60s about black pride and African awareness. Mm-hmm. But the point is that when you say that the United Nations is going to have an indigenous conference of people from all, and that you also invited, I think therein lies the rub. We're the ones going to dictate, you know, who we are. Everybody has to tell who you are. You have to tell your story. That's why I'm going to listen to it, because I've always believed, really, that the Armenians got a bad deal. Mm-hmm. But what you have actually brought to the table shows how bad it really was.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the number one problem of light-skinned people of color in America is resisting assimilation. Mm-hmm. And I would like to tell you about this wonderful magazine called Cultural Survival. And they have a website, and they have stories of indigenous peoples around the world, you know. And when I was in Kenya, they had a United Nations conference on the status of women in 85. And the Turkish representatives had the police take me out because they said that I was telling lies about the genocide. And this Kenyan man who had worked with an Armenian took me to these villages where I was, you know, talking with them, and we had solidarity. And, you know, I'm very lucky that I had an opportunity to go to the motherland. I think nowadays a lot of people don't have that opportunity, but I think the indigenous people of the world, you know, we have had our land taken away. We have been raped and defiled and degraded in every way, and now it's time for us to realize that we have the power of the rocks inside the earth, that power, and we are that strength, and we will survive.
Well, Anoush Tertullian, I'd like to thank you for sharing this time with us, and we, of course, try to get the word out to as many people about the struggle that people are having in Armenia still today, and that the idea, if people are going to really have a move towards social justice, they have to remember that they can't forget things that are taking a kind of a toll on people, like a genocide, and therefore, I guess in a country that was based on genocide, this country was founded on genocide. The population here from, say, Alaska all the way to the tip of Chile at one time in this hemisphere was 100% indigenous.
That's right.
And what are they now? And see, and because of that, we can't never forget that, too. That's the biggest story. But it shows you what the smaller stories, when you link them all together, genocide is something that should never be conceived and never executed.
Yes, and just remember, everyone that looks white may not be white.
Thank you.
You're